Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, September 15th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and learning and building skill with some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. And these tools are available, gratefully, absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, is the title of the book. And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also click on a link that will take you to a page where there's all kinds of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the actual use of that tool. And or talking about testimonials about how the active use of that tool has improved the quality of their life and relationships. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because then they can, it usually sparks comments or questions or testimonials, and you can call us to talk about those things at 563-999-3581, or you can email us. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. We're also doing the Course in Miracles experiment and the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 258th day of the year, and the Course in Miracles lesson says, let me remember that my goal is God. Let me remember that my goal is all of creation, connecting with the Creator. And the commentary reads, all that is needful is to train our minds to overlook all the little senseless aims and to remember that our goal is the Creator, union with the Creator. The Creator's memory is hidden in our minds. It's obscured, but our pointless little goals, which offer nothing, or by our pointless little goals, which offer nothing, and they do not exist. So, shall we continue to allow God's grace to shine in unawareness? Or will we become aware of it? Let's look past the toys and trinkets of the world that we are seeking and look for connection with the Creator's mind. The Creator's mind is our only goal, our only love. We have no aim but to remember the Creator. Our goal is to but follow in the way that leads to you. We have no goal but this. What could we want but to remember you? What could we seek but our true identity in you? And then the Course in Miracles experiment with Pam Grout, lesson 258, is titled, "Today would be a really good day to forgive someone." She quotes Richard Rohr. I was reading one of his articles a couple times in the past week or so. She quotes Richard Rohr as saying, "In the end, only lovers seem to know what is going on inside of God. To all others, God remains as impossible and distant and secret, just like the galaxies." Pam writes, "The F word. You can't really practice the course without bumping into it. It's like brushing your teeth, taking a shower, ingesting a multiple vitamin. It's an ongoing daily prescription. Although the F word is widely misunderstood, there's just one thing to keep in mind. It's like Reykjavik in the game Trivial Pursuit, only instead of being the answer to every seventh question, something I noticed about Reykjavik back in 1979 when the popular board game first came out, the F word covers literally everything. Here's a partial list of the many uses for forgiveness. The Swiss Army knife of all spiritual practices. Do you need help in physical healing? Try forgiveness. Do you desire a better relationship? Employ forgiveness. Do you want to manifest your dreams? You got it. Use forgiveness." So the F word for Pam Grout is forgiveness. Lesson 258, titled, "Today would be a really good day to forgive someone." So that's our Course in Miracles workbook, lesson 258, and the Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And we have, as usual, about 50 minutes left to have a conversation. Entertain your comments and questions. Hear your testimonials. Have you suggest a topic for us to discuss? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? What would be beneficial for you? We had our Tuesday night support group last night, and we listened to the second installment of the Aramaic Lord's Prayer, the second line of the prayer, as it was talked about by J.M. and his insights, his intuition, his connection with his spiritual teacher, and he was sharing it because for him, that prayer, the Aramaic Lord's Prayer, which the Catholic Church would call the Our Father, it begins with the line, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." But Dale Ellen Hoffman, Dr. Michael Rice, J.M., Rocco Errico, a bunch of other scholars from the ancient Aramaic, they know that given teaching starts with words like Abun, Abun, Debushmaya, Ne Te Kadash, Shmach. And those words, those energies, those vibrations are more about being open, softening, open to the vibrations of higher wisdom, integration, the true creative energy, etc. That they are not about creating a picture of humans as lowly and as their creator, as some magnificent being in the clouds somewhere, like some king that needs to give them permission to exist. And as we opened the group with that yesterday, it then led to some really deep processing and someone doing a very powerful worksheet, a reality management worksheet, because I am convinced that the energy that was created in that Aramaic Lord's Prayer chanting, toning, and discussion made it possible for people to get really honest, really open with some of their more intense emotional struggles. And that's what's needed, right? We were talking about this the other day, and it came up again last night in the support group. My growth, my healing, my integration is probably going to be limited primarily by my willingness. And, you know, people ask, well, how can you know how willing you are? And the answer to that from the ancient teachings is you look at the fruit of your labor. You look at the results you're getting. And if you get really good results, that means you were willing. And if you don't get very good results, that means you weren't as willing. And the question might be, willing to do what? Well, willing to soften, willing to look at what I've been hiding from myself, willing to actually use tools rather than just talk about them, willing to apply the truths that we can observe over and over again in my life, those truths like, if I have a negative emotion active in my mind, in my body's energy system, it means that something about my choice of the focus of my conscious awareness is off the mark. Something about my perception has been distorted. That's a truth. If I'm willing to keep observing after I have that experience of a negative emotion, if I'm willing to ask, how am I creating this negative emotion? If I'm willing to ask, how is this negative emotion a sign for me that my perception is distorted? And whatever it is that I think I'm right about is in error. If I'm willing to ask those questions and seek guidance and answer from various intuitive and other sources, I can make a lot of progress. I can dismantle a lot of the negative energies that feed and fuel my life experience day in and day out. If I'm not willing to ask those questions, if I'm not willing to actively pursue that process of using the tools, then I'm going to stay stuck. I am going to create, I'm going to be active in my creation of my life experience, and I'm not sure if it came up in yesterday's show or it just came up in the support group, but there's a message in the Way of Mastery in the Q&A where it says, your free will cannot be usurped. No one can make you choose joy. No one can make you use the tools that might help you dismantle your anger, your fear, your sadness, your pain, your guilt, your shame. No one. Not even the creator, his or herself. Because once having given the gift of free will, the creator is bound to allow it. So your willingness is essential because you literally are choosing when you're stuck to stay stuck. You're choosing to believe you're right and the world is wrong. You're choosing to buy into the cultural conditioning which says, the more angry I am, the more I know I'm right and everybody else in the world is wrong. And that is really a fine definition for being stuck. My definition for being stuck is when I have a negative emotion active in my mind or body. My definition for being hopelessly stuck is when I'm arguing for my right to have my negative emotion. Right? If you argue for your limitations, they are yours. If you argue that you have every right to be angry, you will continue to choose to be angry. If you believe that your anger somehow serves you and is making your life better, you'll continue to generate your anger and act from it. In this work, though, we're called to question the actuality of that argument. Is it true that my anger serves any purpose other than a wake-up call for me to let me know that my thoughts are off the mark? I remember about 17 years ago that I was doing the support group, and we would, on a regular basis, we would have people come in and they would say, "You're trying to take my anger from me, and I need my anger to protect myself and my family, and my anger drives my creativity," and I would say, "You know what, I'm not trying to take it from you." "Oh, yes, you are. You're saying it's bad." And I would say, "No, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying I find that the best use for my anger is as an alarm system letting me know that my thoughts are off the mark. You can use your anger any way you want. No one in this support group will ever try and tell you what you need to do or be. We're just offering our own observation about how the tools work for us and offering support for using those tools actively in your life." And again, that's what happened last night in the support group. Somebody was willing, somebody was, some would say, brave enough to actively apply the tool of the reality management worksheet and figure out what her mind was telling her that was generating the rage at 10 out of 10 and figure out what her mind was telling her had to happen in order for her to have any kind of peace or calm, and cancel all of that and ask to be shown the hidden part of her mind, which was actually responsible for holding, carrying, bringing into the moment, and then generating the rage she was feeling. And that's what we offer. We offer practical opportunities to use these tools to improve the quality of your life. So, any takers? 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1 on your phone, and we can have a conversation. We can listen to your testimonials or your refutations. And it makes it far easier for us to be of service, to live into our intention with this work. So I'd like to thank those of you who have called in the past and have offered suggestions for book titles and people to interview. And when this call is over, I'm going to get on a call with Dr. Richard Moss and see if he's in line with scheduling an interview. That's a recommendation. I believe it came from Ellen, one of our callers. I've got somebody lined up that I'm going to talk to on Saturday. That's a recommendation from Susan Bingham. So it's one of the benefits of this community that when we have people who are active, when they do their own work and they do their own readings, or they're willing to share what they've read or the podcasts that they listen to that are beneficial to them, it's nourishing because we share. So if you know somebody that you think we should interview, just right before the show started, I got an email from another woman who said, "Here is someone really making a big impact in the world. You may want to interview Sean Perry." When I get those suggestions, it just makes this job so much easier. If you've got a book that you've read that you love, if you've got a spiritual teacher that we haven't talked about here yet, or you've got a particular take on one of the spiritual teachers that we talk about, and the list is growing, right? We've got Guy Finley that we've interviewed. We've got Pierre Pradervan that we've interviewed. Pierre Pradervan introduced us to Robert McGowan, who's the gentleman who's on death row but is a spiritual teacher for hundreds, if not thousands, of people. We've interviewed authors of various books, including Corinne Zupko, who authored the book From Anxiety to Love, which is something she put together as kind of a how-to heal, cure, work with her anxiety based on the Course in Miracles. And she put together an actual program for doing that. She has meditations and questions to ask and practices that really worked for her to turn her intense anxiety around. And if you want a list of some of that, you can go to mindshiftersacademy.org. There is a web page on that website that's just a list of some of the books. It's not even a complete list, but some of the books that we've read and discussed through Mind Shifters Radio. If you've got one that you think would benefit us to expand our horizons with, please let me know. Either call now at 563-999-3581 or send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. I was listening to part of the show with Michael and Jeannie yesterday, and he was telling a story about a three-year-old who went to their parents and sat them down and said, "I just remembered when the three of us met in heaven and we gave each other a piece of our hearts, and then I was born to you." Now, for a lot of people, that sounds pie in the sky or woo-woo or fantasy. But the more I've been around work like this, the more I run into people who have a memory of being young and thinking, they look out at the world and say, it's all about love. It's all supposed to be about love. It's not supposed to be about the drama and the trauma and the anger and the bitterness and the hurt and the shame and the resentment. And I had a session earlier today with somebody who was so crushingly down on herself because she was using what many of us have been conditioned to use, which is the mechanism of comparison. The Buddha warned against comparison. Guy Finley says that most of your negative emotional states and experiences, your hurts, are the bitter fruit of a comparative life. When you compare yourself to an ideal that you hold, or an ideal that somebody else holds, or you compare yourself to somebody else, you initiate a level of suffering on top of whatever's already there. There might already be a struggle. There might already be a physical pain. But when you add the mental emotional comparison, you're layering suffering on top of that discomfort. So I had this woman in my office for a session, and she was doing that. She was comparing herself to others her age. She was comparing herself to the dreams she had when she was younger of what she would have accomplished by a certain age. And she was piling suffering on top of suffering. And I reminded her of this life experience that Michael Rice shared. He had some friends who told him that their three-year-old sat the parents down and said, "I just remembered when we met in heaven and we gave each other a piece of our hearts, and then I was born to you." And when I told that to this woman in the session, she lit up and started talking about she was one of those people. I kind of got that sense from her anyway. She's got that bright, creative, mostly positive energy. And tapping into that memory for her, I could experience in the session how her energy level increased, just in the heartbeat. And that's part of what that's one of the two prongs that we like to recommend in this work. I like to recommend remembering your true nature. Reading every word in Dr. Michael Rice's worksheet that starts out and says, hey, the premise of this worksheet is that my true nature, my very essence, I'll read the actual words, my essential nature, my human life, my very being is the energy of love, the energy of creation. So that's one part. That's one prong. Remembering that on a regular basis. Slowing down. Breathing into the actuality of that. Experiencing myself and my true nature as this miracle of life expressing in form. And the other prong is that when I notice a negative thought, a negative emotional energy circulating in my system, that I will willing to own that that's an error in my thought process. That's a distraction from my true nature, and I'm willing to use the tools from whatever teachers that I resonate with to dismantle that energy, that false belief, that traumatic energy, that negative conclusion about the world or self, that I dismantle the negative as I reinforce the positive. A two-prong approach that yields wonderful results. Ancient teachings would have us understand we are part of the creative flow. I know I've talked about this before, but Dale Allen Hoffman tells us that there's an ancient Aramaic word that was translated, you know, through the various languages and then into English, and it came into English as the word faith. But in the ancient Aramaic, the original thought, the original word, the original concept had a lot more to do with getting centered and the rooted center of me, bringing my conscious awareness into the rooted center of my being, becoming consciously aware that my ability to be alive and be on the planet is a miracle of creation expressing in form. And then taking an action from that. Acting only after I've gotten consciously aware of the rooted center of my being. Being in that moment and then extending from that being, that creative energy. So, how do I get to be more aware of my true nature, consciously aware of my true nature? I use the tools to dismantle anything that's less than love, anything that's less than compassion, anything that's less than joy and aliveness and appreciation. Now, I know a lot of people who bark against this and say, you've got your head in the sand, don't you know how much misery there is out there? Don't you know there's a war going on out there between good and evil? Don't you know? And on and on and on. And my only response to that is that it's been my experience for a lot of years and a lot of study of spiritual teachers that there's always many, many, many times more good going on in the world than there is negative. And it's my choice. I will create my experience of life by what I choose to focus my conscious awareness upon. And if I choose to focus my conscious awareness upon all of the, quote, bad stuff, close quotes, that's going on, I will generate a lot of negative emotional states, fear, frustration, sadness, overwhelm, guilt, shame, etc. And likewise, head out of the sand, head up, looking around, eyes open, doing what Mr. Rogers' mother would tell me to do, look for the helpers. I will always see more people rushing in to help where there's a problem than I will see people who are actively causing death and destruction and mayhem and abuse, etc. There are always going to be more people. A tsunami of people offering love and support, physical, financial support, emotional support, prayers, logistical support, every time there's what we would call a tragedy. And the same is true for most people in their daily lives. I remember reading in the book Lizards Eat Butterflies how even for people who are struggling with depression and anxiety, the actuality, the facts of our lives are that the vast majority of the moments in our life are mundane, boring, good, safety. There are far more moments in my life where the tiger is not jumping out of the bushes at me, where the earthquake hasn't leveled the building, where the diagnosis wasn't this horrible disease. And yet, we have a tendency to focus on those few moments where things happened the opposite of the way we wanted them to, and or we project into the future all kinds of potential negatives that we can be afraid of, we can generate fear about. So we're advocating using the tools to do this two-prong approach. Remind yourself of your true nature as the miracle of life expressing in form, and actively use tools like the ones Michael and Jeannie offer for free to dismantle anything that's less than that true nature. Area code 910, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Dr. Tim, it's Jill from Wilmington.
Well, hello, Jill. How are you?
I am good. I'm calling for help. Of course. I have something. It's a belief that I am ready to let go of. It's like I know I can't blame. So this has to do with my dad, and I think that it probably in some way relates to the reason I called a week ago or so, that core belief of being unlovable. So what I want to say, which I know is not true, but I'm going to say that I have, like, I'm furious with him, almost to the point of, like, I hate him. And I have to have a lot of interaction with my dad lately on some issues that are, like, extremely frustrating and complicated, and they take up more time than I want to give them, and it puts me in a very negative frame of mind. And I already feel that, like, energy in my voice, and I can feel the tension in my body. And I think I have this resentment, deep, heavy, hard, strong resentment that I have to do this, that I have to take care of him. I have to. That's a key phrase right there. And I think that leads to my entire life, I have felt like I needed to take care of my dad. And now I feel the tears. And I mean my entire life. Like, my feeling is, like, from about 18 months to 2 years old up until now, like, I have taken on the responsibility / burden of my dad, who I see as needy and helpless and incompetent and all these things. So is that enough to get started?
Yes. As a matter of fact, to begin with, you will benefit your processing if you talk about it more accurately. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't hate your father, but you have a lot of the energy of anger and hatred coming up, and your mind is telling you that it's caused by him or your relationship
mm-hmm.
with him.
Mm-hmm.
So when you change some of that languaging, then you begin at that rudimentary level to change your perceptual process.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the next thing that comes to me to say is when you're talking about something as early as 18 months or 2 years old, you, brilliant, strong, creative, loving, high-energy two-year-old Jill, you decided you needed mm-hmm. to do something, care for him, fix him, etc. Yep. You did that from your brilliance, yep, from your creativity, from your strength. And it's really beneficial to recognize that's a conclusion you formulated and you came to. Because if you do that, then you begin to recognize it wasn't done to you. There are certain things that might have been done to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You might have been spanked. You might have been isolated. You might have been ridiculed. Those things might have happened to you. But the formulation of a belief that you have to care for your dad when you're only 2 years old is something you did.
Yes, I agree. And I think that's where I'm a little stuck right now, because I recognize that I am furious over something that I decided. And nobody asked me to do it. I think I perceived it, and that was what I decided to do, was that, oh, I have to take care of my dad. And then throughout the years, this has been automatic, and I also think that it's automatically in my life, I have taken on responsibility for things that weren't necessarily mine and then been mad about it. Because that's the,
well,
that's,
and then,
you know.
And then generated anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not mad about it.
Right.
So here's that little, you know, catch in the languaging that is so powerful and so effective when we can catch it. I need to, you know, to make serious progress, I need to notice what I'm doing with my language that's programming my mind to believe I'm a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it gets really subtle. But right,
mm-hmm,
here, if I say I'm mad about this, or I'm mad about that, or I'm mad about him, or I'm mad about her, without realizing it, I'm programming my mind to believe I'm a victim here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another little step to take when you're trying to say, okay, I'm mad at him, I'm mad at her, I hate him, I hate her. Just to wake up to the realization that that is not an accurate description of the dynamic that's creating the anger or the hatred in my system.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to change something, I will need to see it accurately before I can work with it and change it.
Mm-hmm.
So just breathe into that for a minute. This is not you're being angry about this or that. This is, you know, I don't know if you heard when Dr. Rice, a number of months ago, he came on the show and said, I've had a realization. Anger isn't even an emotion. Were you around for that?
I wasn't. I missed that one.
Well, you know, you miss one show, you miss a lot. Anyway, he said, I've had this realization. Anger isn't even an emotion. It's just a,
mm-hmm,
drug.
Mm.
Well, I don't know the truth of that. I don't know if that insight he had is some deep thing from the Akashic Records or the mind of God herself. You know, I don't know what we should believe, but let's just take a look at that. What if,
mm-hmm,
there's some validity to the idea that instead of being, I was just quoting this for somebody in a session yesterday, so I can probably pull it up pretty easily. In The Way of Mastery, in the third lesson, he says, you know, I know you're going to feel anger. Of course you're going to have times where you feel angry. But the essence is, I say unto you, anger is never justified. It does not mean that you will not experience it, but stop fooling yourself into believing that there is some validity to it. Okay, so if my anger is never justified and there's no validity to it, how can I use its presence in a constructive way, as a signpost, as an alarm system? How can I start asking myself actively when anger comes into my awareness, how am I creating this? What am I using this anger to distract me from or numb me out from? what's the pain or fear or sadness in me that seems so overwhelming that I'm choosing this very uncomfortable energy of anger instead of sitting with it? And if I do that before I start outlining my worksheets, the reality management worksheet in this case, I will make more progress because I will start identifying the root cause within me that the anger is there to hide from me or protect me from or cover up. So my worksheets will be more productive because I'll be going more to the root of the issue rather than working with some effect level upset. So here's one of the things that, you know, is just coming to mind as we sit and talk about this. You were saying that whatever's going on in your world right now with your dad, you feel that you're being called to have prolonged contact with him or significant discussions with him about certain critical issues. Is that correct? Did I hear that correctly? Okay.
Yeah.
So when that's happening and you're calling an internet show and saying, I remember feeling that I had to take care of him ever since I was 18 months old. What do you think's going on there? You think that's really about what's happening in the world today?
No, not necessarily. I have a sense that it's like the tip of the iceberg. Like my frustration level and aggravation is way greater than the situation today really warrants. And I also think that anybody else might have a lot more patience and understanding and compassion, because this situation is difficult for my dad too. And he's looking for guidance. You know, he's looking for somebody to help him. And I'm giving him a big middle finger. Like I do, but it's not coming from a loving place, shall we say.
Okay. So the issue is when the anger comes up in you, it's there to protect you from something. What do you think it might be protecting you from? You know, one of the other bodies of work that I was introduced to a lot of years ago, probably even before I ran into Dr. Michael Rice's work, was this thing that said, so sit here with your anger, with your rage, with your hatred of whatever you think the target is, and take a breath and feel it, and then visualize it as solidly as you can. You know, is it a size, a shape, a texture, a temperature? Is there any movement associated with it, et cetera? And once you've got a good, clear sense of it, then visualize setting it just to the side. If you're sitting in a chair, set it over on the arm of your chair. You're not trying to get rid of it. You're not trying to eliminate it or eradicate it. You're just going to move it aside and ask yourself, what's underneath that? What's behind that anger? And if you do that little exercise, if you just feel that hatred, you feel that rage, and you make it as palpable as you can, you get as clear as you can about its actual features in your experience, texture, size, warmth, coolness, etc. And then move it, ask it to just move aside so you can see what's behind it. It's right there. You can get access to it. It can protect you if it needs to, if it's in a role of protector. But just move it aside and see what's right beneath the anger, the hatred. If you do that, what do you notice?
Uh, Well, the first thing I noticed is a reluctance to put it aside.
Okay.
It really does feel like a crusty, protective shell, like something nobody would want to come near or touch. So I guess it's keeping people away, like at arm's length, pushing people away. So the idea, the picture that I'm sort of seeing is like a person kind of in a fetal position, but not really even necessarily a person. It almost could be like a seed before it germinates, like curled up, but it's tender and soft and vulnerable.
That's right behind the anger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that
when
the
I
anger
shift it over,
is, that the hatred is protecting.
If I'm sort of watching the scene, so I've got the anger and I kind of move it over, and then I see what's up behind it is that little balled up person/seed that's real soft, like it has no protective coating.
Okay, so breathe into that. And what would be the emotion or thought of the seed, of the little sprout? What emotion or thought goes with that seed or sprout?
I have blank right now. I don't know.
So just breathe and soften. And you might want to, you know, like to do this work. And basically we're just kind of spelunking in the cave of your consciousness for what might be a good target for a worksheet.
Yeah.
You know, that's not just at the anger level, but what's underneath it. And so you're as you described how the anger is there, and you described this kind of fetal position, little person, or this sprout that's so fragile, you described this really intense need to protect what's behind the anger.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had that belief, you've had that understanding that you need your anger to protect you from something on the outside, and you're protecting this really fragile part of you inside.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's been there for years. So there's a part of you that absolutely believes the anger is an essential protection, and
mm-hmm.
absolutely believes that you don't want to give up the anger at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really want to see what's behind the anger because you haven't been willing to look there for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So part of this process of getting access to it is to convince the fearful part of your mind that you are willing to see what's behind the anger, to really understand what it is that is being protected and why it feels so important to protect it. So you might have to do some work with this and explain to it that you understand that it doesn't believe you when you say you want to know what's going on under there. Literally talking to a part of your mind that's protecting, shutting you off from part of your own awareness, and say, I get it. I know that I've spent so long hiding from you and running from you that you don't really believe me when I say I want to see what's behind the anger. I want to understand that. And gently work with that a bit. And eventually,
mm-hmm.
if you keep working with it and or do a worksheet on your fear of seeing what's underneath the anger, you will get through to that part of you that's the fearful part of your mind, and it will actually believe because you keep coming back talking about it, either doing this visualization or doing the worksheets. It will believe you because of your actions,
mm-hmm.
and it will offer you this awareness that you're asking for.
Yeah.
So take a breath. What are you feeling? I'm hearing kind of a harshness and a distance in your voice. What are you feeling? I'm hearing kind of a clinical analysis in your voice rather than an emotional connection to what we're saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to sort of amuse in a way because in my fury, in my big tizzy of earlier today, everything that I wanted to think just seemed off. Like I wanted to think I hate him, but I knew that wasn't quite right. And I knew that, like, as much as I want to hang on to it and be in that rage, there was a small part of me that was thinking, like, oh, this just doesn't work anymore. But I also, I think it's interesting, the resistance, because I'm not the seed. I'm not that tender little thing behind the anger. I'm watching this happen. There is that detachment of it. Maybe I am the seed, but I don't want to be. You know, like I'm not willing to be the seed. So, yeah, I fully, yes. As the cracks of awareness happen, like I start chipping away at the resistance, I'm also aware of the resistance.
So one worksheet might be on my fear of releasing my resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So the emotion is fear, and what's happening is I can't do the exercise Dr. Hayes suggested, and my thought is, if I do the exercise, it will put me in danger.
Mm.
Or my thought is, I'm not willing to release the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal would be to be able to move through this, you know, the exercise or move through this hatred and get back to love. Anything like that would be a good worksheet outline to see what happens. And I'm just using that goal as a suggestion for you to start to explore. I'm not trying to map out the goal for you, but
mm-hmm.
I'm using that goal that has the word love in it because it's kind of the antithesis of the hatred.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And love, even though there's a tremendous strength and power in it, most of us experience it as being much more gentle.
Mm-hmm.
And the part of you that is absolutely convinced that you need this rage monster to protect you from the world doesn't want to hear anything about gentle.
Right. So a thing I'm feeling and thinking about right now is, I don't want my dad to be close to me. Like, I don't want to put the monster down because I don't want him to get close.
Yes. Yes. Just soften and breathe. Be right there with it. There's a knowledge in you, whether it's accurate, whether it's based in actuality or some distorted reality, there is a knowledge in you that it is not safe for you, the way you currently are configured in your mind and your energy system, for you to let your dad get close. Just breathe. Just soften into that realization. let me know what are the thoughts, what are the processing that goes with just that much. Just letting that actuality in right now. What do you get?
Actually, I feel sort of like a relief in saying that. I'm not really what I would have expected to feel, but maybe just acknowledging the truth.
Well, absolutely. The truth is that thing that will eventually set us all free, and it's the running from it that keeps us stuck. So that's that first level, right, of awareness. The next level is that you might want to do a mind shifter about the opposite of that truth. It's safe and healing for me, and I love it when I get close to my dad. And let everything that wants to scream against that in you spill out on the page. Because there's a lot in there. If this goes all the way back to 18 months.
Yeah, when you said that, my first inclination was just to scream.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and remember, it's just a mind shifter exercise. It's not a prescription for how to move forward in your life. You know, drop all your defenses and then just walk into a big mental emotional hug with your dad. No, we're not suggesting that at all. What we're suggesting is an exploration of the actualities and the realities you've created over the years. And part of what you might be experiencing is an awareness that your dad really isn't a safe person for you to be close to. And you might have, you know, this rage might be originating from a more well-informed younger part of you that knows, you know, dad in his true nature is so wounded that it's not really a useful thing for you to get close to him until all of your wounds have been healed.
Mm-hmm.
Until you're more integrated, until you're more trusting of your true nature as love, until you're more open and aware to the idea that there's nothing of value that can be taken from you and nothing of value that can be added unto you. Mm-hmm. And until you feel that, it may be best for you to keep your dad at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step from that is, what if I'm not 18 months old anymore? I'm not 3 years old anymore. Here's a novel idea. I may have developed some more mature, responsible coping mechanisms to keep me safe than I had when I was 2 or 3 years old. And maybe I can talk to that wounded part of me that feels like rage is the only option, and maybe I can ask it if there's another way it can protect me without immersing me in rage. And that's another level of fruitful exploration that you can go into.
Mm-hmm.
With the breath, with the EFT tapping, if you like that, with the reality management worksheets, with the mind shifter that we outlined, all of those might help you reach a new level of connection to the wisdom within you that wants to rage.
Hmm. I'm struck by that phrase you just said, the wisdom that wants to rage.
Yeah, we don't want you getting rid of this. This is your alarm system, right? There's something in you that mm-hmm. knows, hey, there's something off the mark here.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. You know, at the level of, you know, acknowledging that you were intelligent and creative and bright even at that young age, well, I'm assuming that if I'm having the spidey sense go off and the hairs in the back of my neck go up, that there's really something for me to pay attention to. Now, it might be a danger in the outside world. Most often, it's an error in my perception.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to stay open to both, and perhaps there is this awareness that Dad, from his wounded nature and the pattern that we've established over the years, is something that I don't really have the strength and the resources right now to engage in fully. Okay, and that's why I have this rage come up. Okay, and then I can ask, is there, from that younger wounded part of me, is there another way that I can protect myself and that little sprout wounded part of me other than the overt rage?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the pieces to the seed to answering that will probably come out as you do that mind shifter.
Mm-hmm. There's a few things I'm thinking of. First, I've noticed recently how I do have this spidey sense, and that I notice when there's something different going on, like, okay, like there's an interaction, but I pick up on whatever's underneath the interaction. And then what I do is I tell myself that that must not be true. Like I sweep away my intuition or whatever. I ignore it, or I try to. And the other thing is that rage was not allowed in my family. Although, weirdly, we did also, I had temper outbursts. Rage did come out, and it happened, but it was like you weren't supposed to say anything unless it was nice. Like the it wasn't allowed, but it happened anyway, and so it's confusing. Like rage, I think I felt like it was wrong, and I should sweep it away. And I feel the sense, I have the sense of even as a little baby, like, I'm sure I threw temper tantrums as a two-year-old. I don't know any two-year-old that doesn't, but swallowing too. And I just said to somebody the other day, like, I am well-practiced in acting like everything's fine when it isn't. And that's when I was talking about the undercurrents that I would sense, and like I know like something's not right, but I'm pretending like it's fine. So those are all just thoughts that I have right now.
Okay, well, I would stick with that processing and that mind shifter and see where it leads you.
Thanks, Dr. Tim.
That's a really good start.
I appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Michael and Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, September the 15th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And Jill, you're still on, and Michael is with us. Is there anything we can do to continue supporting you?
I feel like I have arrived in a much calmer place, so I think I can mute myself and just listen, but thank you.
All righty then. Well, welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And I'll just add one thought, just listening to the last couple of things that you said, Jill, and that is to recognize that rage is not an emotion. Rage is a drug. Rage is a way of anesthetizing ourselves. And when I'm willing to stop becoming a user, then I'm going to tend to begin to feel that pain that I've been anesthetizing. So be aware that that will be part of the process of letting go. And we'll hold space for rage to heal and the underlying thought disorders that create the pain to surface, move through, let go, and move to the next level. And so I'm going to start right in with our reading from the end of chapter 17, the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And What You Can Do About It. The book is out of print, but there are copies available. We've sold enough copies way back in the early part of the century that they've been pretty much spread around the globe. So there are used copies available still 25 years later on Amazon, on eBay. They're always there, so you can pick them up there, usually fairly inexpensively. And you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you'll see a picture of the book on the homepage. If you click that and drill down, you'll find copies of the book in several different languages you can download free, English included, of course. So there are different ways to get a copy of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We also sell an MP3 of the latest version. There's only ever been one version of the book printed. There is a new edited version, which never went into print, but was put into an audio format. So that's available on our page. And this chapter that we're finishing up now, The Body Has a Mind of Its Own, looks at the fact that there's a function of information stored in our physiology firing off that we call the mind that really isn't a mind at all. It's a fake mind. And that's why we're talking about how the body has, or the so-called body, has a mind of its own, this ability to store and through resonance bring information forward. And most people call information resonating in brain cells thinking. And the truth is, if most people said what they thought, they'd be speechless, because information, if I say don't think about the color of your car, and of course something about the color of your car resonates in the mind, that resonance is a pure resonance function. It's got nothing to do with reason or thinking. It's just the firing off of information stored in the so-called body's mind. And so we're talking to Richard, and you know, one of the reasons we're offering him the goal of this work is to empower people. And actually, we can't empower anybody, but we're here to support you uncovering the empowerment that lies within you. That's where the real empowerment is. It doesn't come from the outside at all. So that's misspoken slightly there, the way that I wrote it 25 or so years ago. But to uncover the empowerment in people, to become conscious of everything in their lives. People who are not conscious operators of their own minds can be programmed by others to react with any reality in response to any situation. When it comes to deciding whether or not to do your work, Richard, what else is there to do? Once you see that your whole life flows from your inner dynamics, how else can you proceed but to commit yourself to move forward? I could see myself just sinking into oblivion, becoming a hermit in Wyoming. I could just quit. True, but that would say to me that you didn't really hear or develop enough brain cells to see that there's something you can do about your life and about your world. It is not unusual for me to hear from people who attend one of my workshops 10 or 15 years ago. They often tell me they thought I was nuts back then. But a phrase or an idea stuck with them. Then they saw examples of that idea often enough after things finally clicked. They decided they had to know more about the principles of the work. It's like a parable of the parable of the sowing of the seeds. Even if one does not do his or her mind gardening, sooner or later, these ideas take a hold sufficiently to form sensible realities in the mind. This work is innate knowledge for people. I'm not teaching them anything they don't already know. It's just a matter of the inner truth breaking through the layers of insane realities that have been accepted by the mind. And of course, we could say not only accepted by the mind, but accepted in the genes. You know, these ideas based in hostility or fear become generational patterns structured into the mind over many, many, many generations. And that's why it will often take a significant amount of work to break through any given one of them. Once you clean up the twisted ideas and clean out the corrupted files, this work becomes natural. This information should be kindergarten stuff, conversations children have on the playground. Yet it is all but missing from our culture. The absence of an understanding of love is the reason it is so rare, I suspect. And so that's the completion of chapter 17, from Why Is This Happening to Me Again. Our next chapter is going to be a short one. It's called Clarifying Love. It's kind of a fun chapter, but we'll take that up tomorrow. In the meantime, we're honored that you're here to be part of this conversation and to, you know, the act of lending your ears. You know, there's that old, I think it was one of the Greek philosophers, friends, Romans, and countrymen, lend me your ears. When one listens energetically, they are extending the energy that they're listening to. Now, of course, you look at what's being put out in the media all the time in the hostility and fear-based arena of life, and we see millions listening and therefore intensifying the ideas based in insanity that float around and operate our culture. And the reason we do this show is so that there is a supportive conversation, at least somewhere in the world, that is truly based in love and accurate tools for moving in the direction of living as and functioning as a human being. So we're delighted that you're here with your lending us your ears. And we would love you to lend us your voice as well so that this conversation can extend into the arenas that are of most interest to you. So if you're out there in listener land, if you're on one of those stations that we can't see in our control panel, the call-in number for the show is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. If you have a question or a comment, you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and you'll get to hear Jeannie's sweet voice introducing you. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Well, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up?
We do. And it's area code 484. Awesome. Is this Ellen?
Yes, it is. Hello.
Well, welcome, young lady. How are you?
I'm fine. Yeah, something, I guess it was the title of the chapter that you're reading from, that really resonates with me. I think you said it was called the Mind of the Body.
The body has a mind of its own, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I happen to be reading a book right now called The Mind of the Cells. And it's a fascinating book.
Sounds right on.
Yeah. And actually, it resonates in another way with me, too. Back in 1998, I was led to do this type of, to get involved with this type of healing work. I had never been involved in anything like this before, but suddenly it just came into my life and I just jumped on board. And that work was all about rewriting the programming in the DNA. And the teacher, it was just one woman who brought all this information through and the whole technique through. She claimed that what the scientists refer to as junk DNA is really filled with all the records, you know, of all of our experiences. It's all the programming, all the conditioning of that everyone has gone through, you know, and it's just passed down.
I'm in full agreement with that. There's no junk DNA. It's all there for a purpose. And this, you know, one single human form, I mean, you could take literally every giant Cray supercomputer in the world, wire them all together, and you wouldn't have the capacity of one single form. And my take is that in our DNA is the record of literally everything that has ever happened within our structure. And if through resonance, something out of, you know, someone's life 10 generations back in our bloodline is resonated, that pops up and becomes part of what we call the body's thoughts, the mind of the body's thinking. And, you know, usually they're the things that are connected to hostility and fear oftentimes and leave us, you know, lost in thought disorders that simply need to be forgiven. Ultimately, as I see it, you know, if you look at what the cell biologists are saying today, when we think a thought, that thought becomes a neuropeptide, an actual molecule within the body, and it circulates around in the structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. It lands on the receptor site, and the cell biologists are saying that the cell then replicates that thought. My take is a little different. I don't believe the cell replicates the thought at all, but when the neuropeptide lands on the antenna, the receptor site on the cell, simultaneously inserts itself inside of the cell. And if one were looking from inside of the cell and watched that energy enter the cell, they would call that chemistry. That mind energy becomes the chemistry of the cell. And ultimately, to me, the skill that's so important that we develop is the ability to learn to extract the energy that's inserted itself inside of the cell and created aberrant chemistry, be able to decode the content of that neuropeptide, and recognizing when it is not in order for our structure, being able to remove it and replace it with that which is designed for the cell. And that's the, you know, the skill ultimately that needs to be developed with forgiveness, is the ability to really access those things, decode them. And you know, if we refuse to learn to decode something in ourselves because we live in a world of resonance, somebody with the decoder is going to show up in our lives. And when they do, it's not going to be fun. So it's an important skill to develop. So I'm with you, and I'm right with her on that thesis.
Yeah, are you familiar then with the work that was done by Sri Aurobindo? And then later by Mother?
No.
And then, okay. Well, the book that I'm reading now, The Mind of the Cells, was written by a man called Sat Prem, but he was the confidant of Mother, and she was the partner of Sri Aurobindo. So Sri Aurobindo started this work where he decided, and he had been to, you know, all the heights of consciousness, the blissful, wonderful states, and he realized that this is not it, that to go, that in order for, you know, that we're on the planet for a reason, we are a transitional being, and that what we really need to do to transition into a new state of being is to go down into the body, into the consciousness of the cells, and work with what's in there. So he started that work, and like I said, then it was taken up after he transitioned by Mother, and then from there, Sat Prem. I'm not sure if anyone has taken it up since there, but I have suddenly, I don't know, I've just been led to this, and I'm just fascinated with what I am reading. Like Sat Prem has, like, he published 13 volumes of the logs that Mother recorded as she was doing these experiments of going down into the consciousness of her body cells. And it's absolutely fascinating to read. And she talks about having to deal with, you know, all that programming, all that conditioning, and going through and working through all that, and then getting to the very, to what, you know, she says is what you find in the heights is also what is found in the depths. And finally breaking through to that, but within physicality. So like her body, you know, when she would get to that place, would become like the earth itself, and she would simultaneously be everywhere on the earth at the same time. She said there was no time there. So I was just curious as to if you were familiar with the work that they had been doing, because they said this is the way to becoming the new species on the planet. Is finding, you know, going down into the cells, because it has to happen through the body.
And it has to be incarnated here in form.
Exactly.
I'm in full agreement with that. Was there a specific tool? Like for me, the only place I've seen technology that really empowers people to access that hidden content in the cell, in the DNA, is the first century Aramaic forgiveness process. Was there a specific how-to that she describes, that she talks about for achieving these states?
I haven't gotten to that. Well, I don't have that those volumes of, you know, the book. I just started reading another book by him, and it says in there that at the very beginning that, you know, the path that was blazed by them is in Mother's agenda, because it's, that contains all of her logs. It's, like I said, 13 volumes. I have not looked at that to see, well, how exactly did they make that descent into the mind of the cells. So that I do not know, but I'm anxious to find out, because I feel like, wow, I want to take that up. That is what is really calling to me right now. And so, like I said, when I came on today and I heard you mention the title of the chapter, I was just like, oh, this is right in line with, like, where I feel like I'm being drawn. And I don't know, like I said, if others have taken it up since Sat Prem, but the fact is that, you know, one person doing this blazes the path forward for everyone. And then, of course, more and more people, you know, it just eventually it has to become, what he was saying, it can't just be for a few people. It has to become a collective experience. You know, it has to be the whole humanity going through this. And I believe it is happening at an unconscious level. Things are happening that we're not aware of within our bodies. But if we can consciously work towards that by doing that sort of work, then all the better.
Well, if you listen to Yeshua, he talks about, you know, critical mass. He says a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And, you know, I think we can rest assured he wasn't talking about bread. He was saying that it's only going to take a small number of people to open the space for the whole of humanity, for it to be available to the whole of humanity. And, you know, I don't know if you're using the reality management forgiveness process, but that's the best piece of technology on the planet that I've come across as yet, and I've looked at everything I could possibly find for how to do that piece of work that you're talking about being excited about. That's the way to access deeper, deeper, and deeper layers of what's being held in the cell to face and to clean out what doesn't belong. The technology is just awesome.
Yeah, and I have had some experience with it. And yet I find that unless, you know, something comes up in my life that gets me upset, I'm not really drawn to doing it. So the thought that this, I mean, this was what they devoted their lives to. This was, you know, that was it. You know, they spent all their time going on this journey down into the depths of themselves. And so I am really anxious to do what, you know, you just asked about, is find out, well, exactly how did they do this? Because it does seem... Oh, sure.
I just looked up to make sure I was spelling his name right for the note. And it sounds like he was right along with Gandhi. He was doing writings and articles and things about the British rule in India and everything, and he was put in prison. And it said when he came out of prison that he had been given the insight, and he left the politics and that end and went strictly into spiritual work and developed a practice that he called integral yoga. And the central theme of it is the vision of the evolution of human life in the divine body and transforming the human nature and enabling to having a divine life on earth. And yeah. It mentions the lady that's referred to as mother, but it's integral
yoga.
Yeah.
Well,
and
yes,
I know nothing
we traveled
about
a path that gives us the technology for exactly how to do it. And, you know, you might want to look at other places that you might begin to apply forgiveness to your life other than, you know, just the situations where there's upset, and see what that opens, what that moves in you, because I have not found anywhere that even comes close to moving those unconscious patterns faster, more profoundly than Yeshua's forgiveness work.
Yeah, I know one of the things that Mother did, because it was some of her log notes are in the book I'm reading now. She brought in a mantra, which she repeated constantly when she would go down, like, into herself. And finally the cells just started saying the mantra. And it was just like a mantra that means, it's just like a salutation to God. And she would experience, like, it was like she was taking on all the illnesses of the world. I mean, and she would know someone that suddenly, oh, they had this physical ailment, and the next thing she knew, she would be working on that in her own body, and then it would just, she would reach that part where it was just pure love, and it would just be gone, you know? And she felt like she was literally, like, annulling all, you know, the different diseases and, you know, that we have created through our, I guess we're going to call it, misthinking in this world.
Right. Well, you listen to the idea, and it sounds like an exact parallel to what you're saying. Here's Yeshua in the Garden of Gethsemane, and the way they talked about, not really understanding at depth what it was he was doing. They talk about him taking on the sins of the world. Now, you know, many people have, a lot of so-called Christianity has interpreted that as, you know, he took on the suffering, he took on the pain, and as though it were his own. But in truth, my take was that he stood as a space, in the space of willingness to be the conscious, active, present love that would transmute the hate, the fear, the rage, all of those energetic patterns that were at the root of all diseases. So it sounds like they're talking about exactly the same thing. And, you know, again, the forgiveness process is the key to opening that and standing in and as that space where one is willing to transmute the errors held in our bodies, minds, thereby releasing the cell, so that the cell, you know, there's an interesting line in the what's called the Lord's Prayer. It's not a prayer at all, but the instruction set that's been called the Lord's Prayer that can be properly translated. When we look at that, it is asking God, saying to the Creator, Creator, carve out a space in me for your wholeness. And what I hear you describing about Aurobindo is that he was working with carving out that space. That's exactly what Yeshua was about doing. And it's the forgiveness tool that is the carving tool for making the space for love to fully arrive, incarnate in this cellular structure, in this carbon-based memory system, and transmuting everything that's been inherited from the generations that never belonged. And it's all mind energy. You know, if you go to the opening words in the book of John, it doesn't say in the beginning was the Word and the Word became flesh. It says in the beginning was the mind energy and the mind energy became flesh. And it's the mind energy that's out of harmony with love that has created all of our diseases, all of our disorders, and the transmutation of those things that removes them. And the more people who get on the team, the closer we get to critical mass. And when we get to critical mass energetically, because the field of that will become strong enough to permeate every mind on the planet, then every mind on the planet is going to wake up to that capacity and that the willingness to do that piece of work, to take on those energetic patterns that never belonged. And, you know, let's bring healing to humanity. It's time for us to individually and collectively function as true human beings, truly functioning as love.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it is the exact same thing, because the fact that you described the forgiveness process as a canceling, I mean, that sounds exactly like how Mother describes in some of these logs that I've read about how when that light comes in, it just completely annuls whatever the issue was. It just, in an instant, it's
absolutely
just gone, as if it never existed.
Yep, that's it exactly. I can remember, it goes back probably 30 years ago, and I'm looking at the previous 20 years of watching people do some just amazing healing and wondering, you know, what was the key? What happened that, you know, I mean, there were 30 people in the room, and one person went through this mega transformation, and something that literally up to that very instant had been a trauma, a pain, a dis-ease, physical, mental, emotional, relational, financial, in their world. What happened? What made the difference? And what became clear to me, what I realized, was that two things had to occur for healing to happen. One, fully active, conscious, present love had to be in the space, provided by somebody. It might have been the person who was ill, or it might have been the facilitator. But somebody held literally an active space of present love. And when the error was allowed to surface, when it came out of hiding, when somebody had courage enough to open the veil of their temple and allow the dis-ease mind energy that was hidden to come forward, when those two met, there was a transmutation that took place of the disease and the disorder being exposed to the actual presence of love. And the actual presence of love not being somebody standing around saying, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. That's got nothing to do with it. But that the state of created being of at least one person in the space was there, alive, awake, and present. And when the veil of the temple, when the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious opened in the person who was ready to heal, then the dis-ease energy that occupied the internal space was able to come forward in the presence of that act of love, and that's where the transmutation took place. That's where the healing took place. And to me, the genius of recognizing that our perceptual constructs are a product of or a result of, driven by a goal, and that in Aramaic, the word forgive is shebag, or to cancel that goal is to collapse that construct. And, you know, I like to use the visualization of, you know, everybody remembers the 9/11 towers going down and collapsing on their own footprint, into their own footprint. And when you think of a perceptual construct based in error being what's active in somebody's mind, what's running somebody's perception, the construct of their mind, and that collapsing because the driver is removed, the goal is canceled, when it collapses in on its root, its own footprint. At whatever level it is, whether it's back in, you know, if it's me doing the worksheet, whether it's back into my early life or my childhood or the life of my parents or their parents or their parents or their parents, wherever it was, that's the way to bring that aberrant mind energy forward in the presence of love, and that's where the transmutation takes place. And that's what carves out that space in us for true incarnation of being, of our created essence.
Mm-hmm. And do you believe that doing that is actually has the potential to change the whole history of our world?
Well, again, that to me is Yeshua's idea of critical mass. A little leavening leavens the whole loaf. Each person who steps in essence, what I hear him saying is, we don't have to get every insane, rageful, pained, traumatized person in the world to go, oh, I think I'll function as love and forgive. We just need to get enough people who will do that work so that they incarnate as present love. And when we hit that critical mass, that's going to presence active love on a global scale energetically. And then with that presence active on a global scale, whenever something peaks up out of the unconscious of anyone, that transmutation is going to take place, that healing is going to take place. So to me, that's the reason for doing the work. You know, if I thought, I can remember when my son was born, and it's like looking around, it's like, God, if somebody doesn't do something, there isn't going to be a place for this kid to grow up. Mm-hmm. And that's when I made the next level of commitment. That's over 40 years ago, and my son's 42 now, just had a birthday. And that's when I made the commitment to take this to the next level and really make it available on a global scale. That's when I dropped my fee requirements, paid my own expenses, traveled free, because like something's got to bring about that critical mass shift.
Mm-hmm.
And when enough people step in, and one of the reasons for doing this radio show is to keep this conversation going so we reach that critical mass place, and that's when things are going to accelerate. Every person that joins in actually doing the work, not, you know, a lot of people do lots of mental masturbation. Oh, yeah, that sounds like fun, but actually doing the work for most people is another story. Every person who steps in and does a piece of work becomes part of that critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is what ultimately is going to make it available to 7.5 billion people. We're not going to get to, you know, whatever 7 billion minds that are in rage and pain and trauma and hatred and vengeance by standing in front of them and teaching every one of them. Not going to happen. But we can get enough people who will become the space that space will change the game for everyone. So that's why we're doing what we're doing. And we're glad you're part of it.
Yeah, me too.
And if you uncover in your reading of Aurobindo and Mother's work, any other pieces of the puzzle, you know, who knows what we don't know yet. So
right.
Anywhere that you find it and important pieces come forward, I'd be much appreciative if you'd continue to make it available to us. Keep us posted.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's what I'm feeling drawn to right now, so I'm going to dive into that and see what I find. And
Sweet.
If I find some gems, I will absolutely share them.
That's awesome. And we'll hold the space.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, young lady, any other thoughts for you?
Nope, that was it.
All right, well, you have a blessed one then.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, okay. Take care. Thanks for the conversation. All right, well, we're down to about 17 minutes or so. So, Miss Jean, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything else happening in the chat room?
No, there's no hands up, no questions in the chat room. I did put a link in the notes for today, and you can go out and get them after the show, that his practice that he does involves purification, liberation, realization, and enjoyment. And there's a link to a website where he discusses the practice of getting to that point. So I've put that in the notes for today.
Great. Awesome.
So... counting the outro, we have 16 minutes. Oh, we had a hand just go up. I believe it's Miss Julie in Oregon, 541. You're on the air.
Hi, yes, it's me. Hello.
Hey, welcome, young lady.
Yes, who was that that you were talking to? She sounds
like a woman named Ellen who listens to the show often.
Yeah, that was really fascinating. I'm glad she shared it. I'm glad all of this is taking place every moment. Ever since I've been making more and more commitment to this kind of work and this work in particular, it's growing in me. And this book that I want to write, and I'm acknowledging my desire that I've mentioned about energetic devotion. I'm tuning into guidance more and asking things like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? You know, the small self. And I'm being told that the book will write itself through your energetic devotion.
Just be
Isn't
the instrument,
funny?
Make the commitment, and be the space.
Yeah, and just, you know, keep doing the work. And you know, like Ellen was talking about what's fascinating to her, and, you know, there could be something coming forth in her from her place of interest to offer to others who are ready to be touched by all this. You know, I encourage her to do that too, and you did too. And so we're just encouraging each other. I could confess something.
Go for it, young lady. I love it.
I was using the wrong energetic devotion the other day because I've let my energy lower into a place where I thought I never would ever do road rage again. And there it was coming up in me. And it wasn't just coming up in me and then I caught it and I changed my energy. This has been becoming habitual again in me for probably a period of a year now. So this time, you know, and I was just dismissing it because, oh, well, you know, I know better than that. I'll just have to not do that anymore, but then I would do it again. And it's all internal. I'm not hurting anyone, but I guess this one escalated, and maybe I'll keep this short instead of long, but basically I was projecting for sure onto a truck in front of me. And, you know, I've mentioned in the past how one time there was a U-Haul truck in front of me that I just made a turn from my neighborhood to go to an appointment, and I'm right behind a U-Haul truck, which is a rental truck for moving your furniture and your stuff or whatever you have inside it. And and then coming the other way in that same next moment was a garbage truck. And so I had these two trucks in a split second in the same space with me, telling me the message that I'm hauling around my garbage. And so I left my home with an energetic disposition, whatever it was. I was mulling around in something, but I had to go to my appointment, so I left my home with all this energy ready to ripen, you know. And so that was many years ago, and I was in this work, and since then I've improved. However, there was something that came up for me to heal, for my healing, and I was being aggressive about this truck in front of me in the left lane that was just sitting there. In my judgment, I had all these judgments. They were unconscious. They weren't following the rules. They were holding everyone up, and they seemed to do that habitually all the time now. And, you know, so I decided to, in the recent few months, I've been honking at them when they finally get over, like, you know, duh, you stupid idiot, you know. I mean, energetically, that's it, okay? And so who am I? Who am I to teach them these lessons? Who am I to say they have to operate differently? Who am I to say that they're to blame for how I'm feeling, right? I'm just like Richard in the book. My
of course,
child
we know better
up.
Than that one, right?
Right.
Who so, am I to lie to myself?
I have that privilege if I want to use my life energy and love that way, you know. It wasn't loving. It was just really projecting, huge, huge, you know. And so I got back in equal measure, Michael, the amount of energy and the kind of energy, exactly what I was projecting. And luckily, I didn't get into danger because I was really operating at a very low level and anger and being right. And so I was trying to get that truck's attention to do what it was supposed to do, the driver was supposed to do, and he finally got around. Meanwhile, two other, this will just be short, two other people used their middle finger at me, two other drivers, observing my behavior. And that was a very powerful message. Yeah, and they held it for a good, you know, minute, a good minute. You know, you idiot, do you get what I'm saying? And so I had to be responsive, and I tried to just chill myself. And so one of them, actually, once I got around the truck and then I slowed down to the normal speed limit, they came up on me really fast and tailgated me really closely with their finger at me like a weapon, you know, until we both took the same exit and I went to the right and they went to the left. But I got that message, and I got that anger, and I got what I triggered in someone else, and I got that I made the choice to do that, and I could make a different choice, and everyone else would be better off if I would make that choice.
Yeah, my offer would be you didn't make a choice to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think you made a choice to do that. Your body's mind made a decision out of old pain.
Yes.
And when you choose to address and forgive that, now my question would be, how many worksheets have you done on that?
Well, that's really bad. I'm giving myself that finger, aren't I? Like I'm not worth it. Wow, that's a big worksheet. I'm not worth doing the worksheet on these energies to have them removed.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So my input to you would be that whole scenario that you're engaging in unconsciously there is really putting yourself in grave danger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd suggest you do some work around that because you don't need that. You know, and I suspect from what you've processed in the past, some early childhood stuff where there was some pretty strong energy pointed toward you, that it's probably a replication of a power person dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And you might want to dump that one because in that circumstance, that can be, literally significant danger. It's like you really need to be attracting that or resonating that.
Yeah, you know what I got? Early childhood recklessness. I've never really worked on anything like that. Huh. Thank you.
I think they call it reckless endangerment.
Oh, yeah, probably. That's right. You get a ticket for reckless endangerment.
So
yeah.
You deserve
wake-up
safe
call.
Spaces. Yeah, wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to create that kind of situation to stimulate you doing the work you need to do to clear that early childhood stuff up. But mm-hmm. I would suggest you really seriously do some work on it. And
okay.
You just don't need to go there.
And I do, well, I just have to say.
Breathing with you. What's happening with your breath? Pay attention.
I'm
there.
Just feeling the gratitude that it didn't go further. And that somehow, by the love that I truly am, I was contained in safety. I was safe, and so was everyone around me, because this was my lesson, and if I would have been less willing to learn it, or at least observe myself, it could have gotten worse.
Yeah. So my input would be that if you think about when your power person pointed that kind of energy toward you, you did not deserve it. And the automatic decision system kicks in when something unresolved like that is resonated, and we puke it on somebody else without asking ourselves the question, did they deserve it? And they don't deserve it any more than you did. And that's one of those things, it's time to put good breath. That's one of those things, it's time to put that type of behavior, that type of thinking, that kind of type of rage to rest in our culture, because that's the kind of stuff that comes back and bites us.
It really does. In equal measure.
Yeah. And we have more control over what comes and bites us than we have been led to believe. And the control mechanism is, how often are we willing to dish it up? It sounds like you got some instant karma of people, you know, showing you what was going to cycle back to you. And I'd be using that as a really strong signal to do some work and be finished with that.
Yeah.
Because you don't need it. You don't need it.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I made my confession today. Thank you for your support.
You've got it 200%.
See, this is where the Christians, one of the ways they misdirected what Jesus was teaching about forgiveness, they usurped and stepped in and said, we will be your intercessionary. You know, you can confess to us and we will forgive you. You know, and that's such a detour from what really this
big detour. And or they said, we'll be the intercessory that brings God's forgiveness to you. And God is never going to forgive anyone for anything. It's never going to happen. It's a total fallacy to think that God forgives, because for God to have to forgive, God would have to judge first, and judgment just isn't there. I know that humans have got all their judgments, and, you know, Yeshua says, I come to save the world, not judge the world, but then we hear people saying, yes, and on the last day, he's going to judge you. It's like, hey, when he was here before, he refused. You think he's going to change his mind? It's not what it's about, and forgiveness isn't about, you know, earning some authorities, letting you off the hook for what you've done. It's you being willing to remove those energetic patterns from your own cellular structure, those generational patterns. That's the forgiveness work. So, you know, we've been fed a fallacy that somebody's going to forgive us. It's never going to happen. It's not possible. But we can engage in the tools of removal of what never belonged in our structure, and that's the forgiveness that's going to occur.
Wow. I'm just getting that from my childhood, I've been waiting to be forgiven, because in my childhood, I was taught, you know, that someone had to forgive me. And so if I did things
big
wrong
fallacy.
And I was reprimanded for it, if I was punished for it, whatever it was, there was a residual of not feeling good rather than being restored to love. And so waiting my whole life to be forgiven, especially the closer I get to dying and going to heaven, you know, all these programmings. And so now I'm so grateful that they're coming up for me to clear out.
Yeah. And people don't die to go to heaven.
Well,
you've got to
yeah.
live to go to heaven. And it's not some after place after the body collapses. It is here. It is now. It is within you, that space of absolute connectedness to love. And you don't get forgiven to go there. You choose to remove the energetic patterns that keep you in hell and pain and trauma, and therefore out of the state that's possible here and now within.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're down to the last minute or so
okay.
I'm going to just say we'll breathe with you and hold the space and let us know the results of what you uncover with the rest of the work you do around this issue. And everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.